we present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from Luton on Sunday, read by Zeb Soans.
Luton police have carried out a series of arrests. Those charged include Genghis Khan, who is suspected of identity fraud.
Our thanks to David Oakley-Hill for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Katie Brand. Opposite them on my left, Humphrey Carr and Fred McCauley. Jeremy, who pledged a referendum to save an election?
Cameron's getting in a tiz because, well, as the audience here are aware, this show is recorded on a Thursday, which is annoying because elections are always held on a Thursday and we always don't know what the result is, so we have to guess. So we're guessing that UKIP are going to do quite well because they've got a certain novelty value at the moment. And it's wrong to dismiss UKIP as just bigots and maniacs, apparently. you can't say anything these days. It's political correctness gone mad, it is. But I was heartened to see them say that they're a non-racist party. I thought, that's good. And I thought, well, they didn't actually say anti-racist. There's a nuance there, isn't there? Well, I'm not personally a racist, but I have nothing against racism in principle. In fact, some of my best friends are racist. It's got Cameron all in a tiz, so he said he will legislate on having a referendum.
Why do you think Nigel Farage hates Europe so much? Do you not think we should track down the French exchange student that broke his heart all those years ago?
I hear that Europe came to his family's village when he was a young boy and ravaged the town and carried off the women folk.
I worry that perhaps one of his grandparents is European.
Yeah, in the same way that a lot of homophobic people turn out to be gay.
Yes.
He may well turn out to be Italian.
Yes. Can you imagine?
When he gets home, he puts on leather gloves.
Is there a timetable for the referendum?
No, is the lovely thing about it. It's a kind of serious consideration that maybe there would be a referendum, but it wouldn't be before and maybe it'll be after. We're not really sure.
You have to be careful, as we've discovered in Scotland. If you mention it often enough, suddenly one will appear on the horizon.
Yes. If we leave Europe, Dunning, because we're connected now with the tunnel, is there like a plug that you can...
Well, I saw somebody digging in Motherwell. I think we're having a tunnel of our own.
Okay. but that would sort of go to Denmark, wouldn't it?
And what's wrong with that?
Nothing.
On the eve of the local elections, David Cameron indicated that he was prepared to give serious consideration to placing an EU referendum on the statute books. It has been suggested that the move was in response to polls showing UKIP moving forward. UKIP was previously dismissed by the Conservatives as a party of nuts, fruitcakes and clowns. Terrible political movement, but a splendid children's birthday party. We can only guess what's happened in the elections, but commiserations to the Lib Dems. 2 points to Jeremy. Katie, who had a taxing interview this week?
Well, it was Miliband Minor, wasn't it? The kind of the Miliband saga, like one of the worst Geoffrey Archer books you've ever read. He was asked for a straight answer, I believe, on several occasions, and he appeared to not know his own economic policy or several of the other policies that they've been sort of banging around between games of squash for the past few years. And he had quite an embarrassing interview, which he then had to admit that, you know, we all make mistakes.
You could hear David laughing all the way from New York. It was... Anyway, what we've done, it's a thought, we've tried this at home. It's a little drinking game. Have a listen. Every time Miliband fails to answer the question, have a drink and see how you get on.
your solution to producing more growth is to spend more, is it?
Well, let me give you just one figure, because I think it's really important to...
If you were Prime Minister at the moment, you would be spending and borrowing more, wouldn't you?
Well, I don't accept that borrowing would be higher under a Labour government.
All I'm asking you is to explain how you're going to boost growth. No, I just want a straight answer to that.
Well, I am giving you a very straight answer.
I'm asking you what you would do right now. Yeah, if I made you Prime Minister right now, what would you do?
What we would do right now is the five-point plan for growth and jobs.
So how would you fund that?
Well, what I'm saying to you is that we'd have that temporary VAT cut.
So you'll have to borrow more, wouldn't you?
No, because you don't understand, Martha. I don't think you're quite accepting this point.
I'm asking you about your plans, George Osborne. I'll be talking to the Prime Minister. I want to ask you.
But it's very relevant.
I understand why you want to change the subject.
I'm not changing the subject at all.
Just answer my question, which is...
It's very relevant to this point. It's very relevant to this point.
You want to cut...
When she said, if I were to make you Prime Minister now, she said, can you just do that? Please, Martha.
But the funny thing was, you could hear the panic in his voice when she said it. Like, if I could make you Prime Minister now, it's like, oh, God, don't do that. I haven't figured it out yet.
Inside, he'd be saying to himself, don't say magic beans, don't say magic beans.
But the excuse was that he was overexcited because he'd been to a Q&A with the public. And I haven't seen that. Have you seen these on television? Does these Q&As? Apparently he stands on a pallet to do them. I don't know what he does when he's finished. Perhaps a forklift truck puts him back in the warehouse along with all the other planks. I don't know what to do.
The thing that I've taken away from it is Orison is really reinvigorated by dreams of becoming a public servant.
Okay.
Because you get these political aides that come along the next day and go, no, you didn't mean any of that. You're stupid. Because actually, he meant something really different. Yeah. And I would love that in my personal life. If every awkward social interaction I ever had, someone would appear the next day and go, oh, yeah, now, you know how on your date, Humphrey, he led you to believe that he was a rarely employed actor with a pot belly? Well, actually, he's a sexy fighter pilot. So... No, you're stupid.
But I did hear that he'd gone on another interview the next day and said, it's good that I can come on this interview and explain what I tried to say yesterday. And just wait till tomorrow's interview.
He was sort of... It wasn't so much digging himself into a hole as standing in a ditch and hitting himself on the head with a spade. In an interview on The World at One, Ed Miliband failed to answer a question 8 times about how he would fund his proposed VAT cut. He also failed to answer a question 10 times about whether he'd done his physics homework and brushed his teeth. Eventually, Ed went on to admit there would be a rise in borrowing to Lorraine Kelly on Daybreak. A strange place, perhaps, but it follows in the footsteps of Lorraine's other political exclusives, including John Prescott announcing he was going blonde, and Yvette Cooper joining Girls Aloud. 2 points to Katie. Humphrey, what was credited with a universally underwhelming debut this week?
Ah, now I suspect this is the rollout of the brand new benefit system, Universal Credit.
Woo!
Woohoo! Yes, that's as limp a response as that is really how it's gone down. It's the new system to replace the benefits, to roll 6 different benefits into one. I was initially very disappointed the story was not about the company that James Bond pretends to work for in the films, Universal Exports. It's just some boring thing about people that don't have much money getting money off the government. I mean, I think I speak for everybody in this room when I say they should all be fired out of a cannon into the sun. Right. Yeah? You laughed, you're complicit. That's how the system works.
Well, the weird thing about the system, it expects the poorest in society to have access to the internet.
That's the system.
I should underline, provided a free internet service at their council offices, and on the first day, not one person turned up to use it. But maybe they advertise it on the internet.
Yeah, it's all run off Ian Duncan Smith's MySpace page. You just go and comment on one of his videos. Can I have some money, please? And then if he likes it... I haven't been on MySpace for years. I've got a life.
No one has.
Yeah, no one has at all. Actually, the guy that ran MySpace, he sold MySpace years ago, and he's on Twitter now, and apparently people... I follow him on Twitter, and it's brilliant. Every day, someone, somewhere, some idiot who's bored, sends a message being like, no one goes on MySpace anymore. And he just tweets back, yeah, I sold it for $580 million about 6 years ago, so I'm just lying by my pool replying to you, you tit. Which I think is a great way to spend your retirement.
So if you finally work out that you're entitled to benefits, it's going to take forever. And then by the time you're 65, IDS knocks on your door and wants you to pay it all back. That's how it works. Now, doesn't he want all the money back from pensioners?
Yes, yeah. They're trying to sort of find ways in which they can sort of scrimp and save. And he's cutting back on the previous sort of pensioner-based economy of re-spreading money through £20 notes in Christmas cards.
I send £20 notes sometimes to my kids at university, and they call them purple drinking vouchers.
By the time you get to 60, though...
It's not long.
5 years, but the pension age will be about 90 by then. Because it'll just be receding, won't it? It'll be like, follow the light, and you'll never get... It'll just always... the pension will just recede
after
away.
All those years of tough physical labour, Sandy.
I know.
Like you must be looking forward to a break.
No, honestly, the retirement age is a bit like driving to Cornwall. The closer you get, the further away. On Monday, a trial of universal credit started in Ashton-under-Lyne. The scheme will start off in a concentrated area before gradually taking over the country. Sounds like Boris Johnson. 2 points to Humphrey. Fred, listen to this.
I hear something saying... The sound of the men working on the chain.
Hi, welcome to Drive Time here on Radio 2. Fred, who's keeping luxuries locked up?
It's Chris Grayling, who has said that prisoners are going to have to earn privileges rather than get them from the get-go whenever they step over the threshold of their five-star accommodation. I've visited prisons, and the ones that I saw, and this is Scotland, they all wear prison uniforms. Not like the guards. I mean, that would be confusing. But they have.
I like the idea of a prison mufti day, though. Like for maybe like for comic relief, where they all pay a pound and they get to wear their own clothes.
Bring your victim to work day.
But the withdrawal of Sky Sports, that's a privilege that's going to be taken away. And I have to say that in the prisons in Scotland, Sky Sports was seen as something of a punishment, given the state of our football up there.
I read a thing by someone from the Howard League that said they only get Sky in G4S prisons. They don't get them in state prisons. It's the G4S ones because they're understaffed. They're just like bad childminders. They just put on a DVD, lock the jail and go away.
But you wonder if this is going to happen, because I got to think, I was having a look at all the various things that have been suggested. In 2010, Ken Clark pledged that prisoners would be forced to do a 40-hour week for a wage which would be paid to victims. And you think, well, this didn't happen, but surely the job would have to be sentence appropriate. I mean, you wouldn't want to get Chris Hune teaching, I don't know, driving theory. You'd have to...
I was quite confused with the whole story because I've never been to prison. I know, hard to believe. But my understanding of prison is derived largely from porridge. So I thought it was just a hilarious place where everyone bought things with snouts. I just thought that Harry Grout ran the whole place. Mm. You spent a lot of time running around trying to get one over on Mr. Mackay. It sounded brilliant. Mm. Turns out it's ghastly.
It's enough to put you off crime, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I've certainly changed my view about the whole thing.
I hadn't quite realised there was a private prison sector. Mm. Like a kind of private school sector, state prison and private prison.
Well, who do you think is going to run crime if they don't have private prisons? you've got to have people who have the status of a private prison background in order to be in charge of organised crime.
And is it that anyone who went to private school who's an MP and has been fiddling their expenses, they go to the private prison?
They get to go to Cheltenham Ladies Prison.
Yes, yeah, you're issued with a Labrador as you go in. But it's not a very good one. Yeah. I mean, he'll come when you whistle, but he will not pick up pheasants.
Male prisoners will have to work harder and make greater efforts to cooperate in order to earn privileges such as watching television under plans for prison reform announced by Justice Secretary Chris Grayling. There will be three levels of privilege: basic, with minimal privileges; standard, which allows more socialising and money; and enhanced, which allows you to keep running your bank or constituency while inside. 2 points to Fred. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Katie have got 4 points, but so too have Humphrey and Fred. We start round two with a cutting spotted on the Radio 4 website.
Have you ever felt isolated by technology? If so, we'd love to hear from you. Just message at Radio 4 and use our hashtag on Twitter.
And our thanks to Emma Woolerton for sending us that. Jeremy, whose willpower means he's making a royal mint?
It's Chuck Windsor. And he is the posh biscuit magnate, as you know, and also the Duke of Cornwall. So it's not all fun. He has serious responsibilities. He is a feudal overlord, as well as walking around carrying a staff needlessly. I mean, if you've got a back problem or bad knees, you might need a stick if you're old, but just to carry a staff. He thinks he's a wizard, doesn't he? if you don't make a will and you die, more fool you, and you haven't got any family, then what happens is, normally, that money you'd think would go into the public sector and get spent on good stuff. In Cornwall, it does not. It goes to Prince Charles, all of it. And this is a very poor county. It's got a lot going for it. It's very beautiful. Cornish people are always fond of saying, all the artists come here for the light, and you have to break it to them that everywhere's got light, really. It's I went to Extra one time, I couldn't see a bloody thing. The fact is, it's terribly poor, and they could use this money, but Charlie's sitting on it, and he donates a bit of it to his charities, which he runs. And one of them is sponsoring Cornish boys to go to Gordonstoun Public School in Scotland, which is a hell of a long way. It's about as far from Cornwall as you can get, apart from America. And they'll all come back with stupid accents, saying, "Hello, Father, I've been away and been privately educated. I haven't got a clue what you're talking about. Do you want this pasty or not? You better have it now or the seagulls will get it. Help me get this rum through this cave."
Everything you said in the last 5 minutes seems to suggest that you live in the 17th century.
Yeah, wasn't that an episode of Poldark?
Poldark was very accurate. Poldark was a documentary.
Get back to the point. If Prince Charles has got 3.3 million, why doesn't he make another one of those kind of fantasy villages? What's that one in Dorset, Poundland, that he made?
What is it called? It's like, for him, that's like Lego, isn't it? Like, for a normal
child that
makes a sort of a Lego village.
Can I just say, though, on the Lego thing, I mean, Denmark, we have the royal...
Oh, I see.
We have a royal family, but, you know, they work for a living. Everybody has to do time in the Lego mines. It's not just...
Lego is really Denmark's secret shame, because a lot of young Danes die of Lego lung in those mines. If you get one of those really long ones, just lodged in your lung, it's game over.
Do all the princes get something? Does Prince Edward get all the money lost down the nation's sofas? I mean, what just happened? Do they all get something?
Well, he's the Earl of Wessex, isn't he?
So that's a made-up country.
It was a country once, Sandy,
yes.
Once upon a time. So he gets all of King Alfred's lost treasure.
Prince Charles automatically receives the money and assets of people in Cornwall who die without wills or family. Last year alone, he made £450,000 from people dying without making a will. And to put that in perspective, that's almost the price of a packet of his biscuits. Katie, who's got a brand new idea for policing?
This is a police force, I think in Dorset or somewhere in the West Country,
Dorset.
Who have come up with an idea due to cutbacks in police funding that they should get private sponsors to fund the police. So they should do deals with private sponsorship companies, which I think is an excellent idea.
Okay.
And I would like to see someone like Dane Pack or something to sponsor the police.
Be very careful.
That whenever the police come, you could legitimately say, "Can anyone smell bacon?"
I like all this. I like the idea of having things brought to you. You could have your tasering was brought to you by Currys for all your for all your electrical needs. I quite like that.
Every time they stop and search someone, they'll go, "Every little helps."
Tasering should be by Tandy, so they fire it and then they go, "Oh no, could you put your tongue in a car battery?" I have to declare an interest, Katie. I lived with a policeman for a number of years, or Dad, as he used to call him.
And did you feel safe and secure and snug in your bed?
No, I used to suffer a number of beatings at school from the children of the men that he'd arrested.
If they're going to be sponsored, they should be forced to run marathons when they're on duty. Because, as we all know, the only way you should ever give money to anything is if somebody is prepared to run a pointlessly long way. And that's what's fantastic about the marathon. Because if someone says to me, "There's been a terrible disaster in a developing country, will you donate?" I say, "Not unless you run over 30 miles for no good reason."
Change of tone, though, with this branding. You have the right to remain silent, as silent as driving the new Peugeot 5.
They'd all be sponsored by Dunkin' Donuts. When my dad was in the City of Perth Police, they got the first panda cars, and this totally changed their eating habits. they had the radio system, and somebody actually complained in Perth that they'd heard the following conversation, which was, control to Panda 2, come in Panda 2, aye, Panda 2 here, can you go to number 147 High Street and collect the evidence and bring it back to, hang on a minute, yeah, the sergeant wants his evidence with tomato ketchup.
Sponsorship should be appropriate for the thing. You should have Morphy Richards sponsoring kettling. You should have... You have the right to remain fabulous, thanks to Mandy's hair and nails.
Because you're not worth it.
Have you noticed that policemen are getting younger every day? Yes, that's thanks to L'Oreal.
You're going away for a long time, sunshine. Thanks to Thomas Cook.
Police stations and cars could be branded with the logos of corporate sponsors under a deal proposed by Police and Crime Commissioner for Dorset, Martin Underhill. Police budgets have been squeezed recently thanks to austerity measures and the News of the World closing. 2 points to Katie. Humphrey, listen to this.
If I were a boy, even just for a day, I'd roll out of bed in the morning and throw on what I wanted and go.
Well, and time to say goodnight here on Radio 2. Humphrey, who's being schooled in the art of trumpet blowing?
This is a story about girls at Wimbledon High School, which is a very fancy fee-paying school in West London, who are being taught how to boast more, because the feeling is that the ladies... with a Z, are rather more reluctant about not hiding their lights under a bushel, or whatever the phrase is, and not very good about sort of promoting themselves in the workplace and things they're missing out to the gents. They've got this kind of success week, I think it's called, where they all have to write successes of theirs on postcards and pin them up around the school, which sounds absolutely terrifying and horrific to me. The thought of having to do that when I was at school fills me with dread. Mine would be like, I beat my top score at Tetris and I haven't cried during Black Beauty. 2 whole weeks with dry sheets.
Do you know what the funniest thing about this story was that in one report about it, they'd said that the same school last year had a similar scheme called Failure Week, where pupils were taught how to accept and respond to failure. And I just wonder whether perhaps Success Week is a response to how successful Failure Week was.
A seesaw from one to the other. Like, oh, God!
This notion of putting your skills and achievements on the postcards I found interesting, because I walked up here from Oxford Circus and a lot of the young ladies seem to have been putting their postcards in the telephone box. They've all got a very similar skill set.
I think women just get all their... girls get all their boasting out of the way on Facebook, don't they? Because Facebook is just people bragging about their perfect life. Oh, look at our wedding, it was so great. Well, so what? It's not going to last. No, look at our holiday. It was great. No one cares about your holiday unless you lost your bags or were taken hostage. That's interesting. The fact you had perfect weather and went to a craft museum is not interesting. Look at our beautiful, talented children. Your children are as ugly and weird as everybody else's children.
This thing where you photograph things and it goes on the internet, I would agree with you that all people do is take photographs of their food, and unless they've used their food to spell out a clue to the location in which they're being held against their will, it does seem a trifle pointless.
Look where the lobster's pointing!
Yeah, yeah. The floor would never fall at that angle. Yeah. It's pointing to something.
Wimbledon High School for Girls is to give its pupils lessons to encourage them to be brave enough to acknowledge their strengths and achievements and thus better equip them for the workplace. The initiative has proved very popular and there's now a waiting list of 60 girls and one Ed Miliband. Fred, why is ageing really all in the mind? I... 2 points.
Age.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, what
it's
did
the
you
scientists
say?
Again.
What did you say?
Yeah, they've discovered that there's a part of your brain, and given that I'm the oldest person here on the panel, I've researched this pretty thoroughly, and what happens is this little bit of your brain, if there's a chemical, either gets into it or doesn't get into it, you live longer or don't. In mice. It's mice. They've been making mice live longer by shutting off part of the brain. It's called the... It's hypothalamus or hippocampus. I'm not sure.
Any hypothalamus. Many?
And that looks after what? Growth and aging.
How do they know the mice are getting older? Do they start making funny noises when they sit down?
They claim pension for longer. I don't know that I want to live longer. I think I've kind of planned things all out.
Have you?
Yeah.
There's nothing strapped under your shirt, is there, that we should...
do we really want it? What is it, 20% longer, they're saying? We could live... That's basically another 15 years slumped in front of Midsummer Murders.
That this discovery has happened now where all the worst people are alive and I don't want them to be getting to living longer. Why can't this discovery have happened like during the Age of Enlightenment or something where we could have kept all of those people alive for longer? Or why could, you know, we could have had Socrates now.
Like, what if he was a frightful disappointment? That's the great thing about historical people is that
he's sort of like James Dean, sort of better to be preserved in history.
Even the Enlightenment, there was the equivalent of, you know, the page 3 kind of thing. Hayley of Essex thinks the Enlightenment's silly.
Michelangelo was effectively page 3. He's been made more polite by history.
Well, actually, even in his lifetime, weren't a lot of his nudes painted over by slightly over-enthusiastic priests?
Too sexy.
Too sexy.
The thing is, if you suddenly got another 15 years to live... Bless you.
Sorry.
Jeremy clearly hasn't.
I'm afraid I've got the plague. I probably shan't last the night.
Since 17th century.
Scientists at Yeshiva University in New York have discovered that aging is driven by the brain's hypothalamus after researchers managed to slow down the process in mice and increase their lifespan by 1/5. Scientists stress they may only be able to slow down the aging process. If you want to stop the process completely, you'll either have to die or visit the same voodoo doctor as Joan Collins. I'm going to give an extra point to Fred there.
Thank
because
you.
You're old.
You know, the only other part of the brain that I know is where humour is found. And it's in the medial prefrontal cortex.
Wow.
The only reason I know that is I got headbutted once and found it hilarious.
At the end of round 2, the scores are Jeremy and Katie have got 8 points, but Humphrey and Fred are in the lead with 9. Before we start round 3, here's a cutting from the Daily Telegraph.
A clothing manufacturer has claimed that cash-strapped women are hanging on to underwear for longer, which is hurting their bottom line.
And our thanks to Christopher Prendergast for sending us that. Jeremy, have a listen to this.
Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, it makes the world go round.
Jeremy, whose happiness hangs in the bank balance?
I don't know.
OK.
Katie, do you know?
I think this is to do with a survey and the kind of...
No, too late, Fred.
Hold on.
Is it ageing?
Yes.
It's to do with... It kind of gets filed under the most obvious and pointless surveys in history, which is that the more money you earn, the happier you are.
But are you really, really happy, though?
Well, apparently the categories were something like very happy, happy, quite happy, reasonably happy, satisfied... A bit satisfied, not that satisfied, not too happy. They never asked, are you just abjectly miserable? They just kind of did gradations of happy. So that made them be able to sort of say that everyone's basically all right. But
it's so true, Katie, because if you are very rich, you can not only buy happiness, you can have it delivered.
Absolutely. I mean, but what was actually interesting about this survey is that they found that the people on the lowest incomes had... a high level of happiness quite in common with people on the highest incomes. And that it's all of those in the middle, the striving middle classes, that are actually tend to register the highest unhappiness.
Gosh, I'm surprised about the bit of the poor. Imagine life without Waitrose.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Because that's where I come from. The lower middle class, that's the roots of fascism, is in the lower middle class, those people who listen to Moneybox, you know, those petty-minded little people who've got one telecom share and a set of patio doors that no left-handed asylum seeker is going to take away from them. You know?
This was considered to be the case, wasn't it? That the working class and aristocracy were quite similar in their attitudes to life, and it was the middle class in the middle that were all
ghastly
uptight.
Trade people. Were the middle class created by... Was there miscegenation between the rich and the poor, which then created the middle class?
The sort of hybrid. Mm.
Yeah, so that's why there's that weird sense of lack of identity in the middle class, the pull of two different identities. It is awful being middle class, because you're not really one thing or the other. You know, a sense of identity. I mean, I'm upset by social deprivation, but also by people holding their knife like a pen.
People sort of some low-income person gets into a taxi and sort of goes, oh, this is great, I'm in a taxi. And then sort of upper-class rich person gets in a taxi and goes, oh, this is great, I'm in a taxi. Whereas a middle-class person gets in a taxi and goes, oh, I feel awful about this, I don't normally do it. Normally I'd get the tube, but on this occasion I was just a bit late, or it was raining, or I deserved it, or I wanted to treat myself, or I'm getting a divorce. Just get in the taxi and enjoy it.
What is a taxi?
It's like having a right-wing chauffeur, really.
Oh, right.
Yes.
So just, what, like normal?
I did manage to make £10 last 3 weeks once.
Did you?
Yeah, so eat that, Ian Duncan Smith.
Is that how you survive?
Yes.
£10 note's got a lot of good key nutrients in it.
Brown eating vouchers,
yes, absolutely. Sorry. Researchers from the University of Michigan have concluded that happiness does increase with wealth and continues to rise steadily even after a person's basic needs have been met. Put simply, money does buy you happiness, which explains why everyone on this Radio 4 panel is always so light-hearted and cheery. According to the study, people earning £61,250 said they were fairly or very happy, while those earning £61,249 were miserable sods. 2 points to Jeremy.
I didn't get the answer to that. I shouldn't get my points. I'm sorry, I don't want what I haven't earned.
Don't be so middle class, just take them.
I feel guilty. I know it won't sit with me. I'll have to send them back. I'll be ringing the police in the middle of the night saying, I've made the most awful mistake. I've come home with 2 points, and I'm sure they're not mine.
If nobody claims them, sir, you can have them by the end of the week.
That's absolutely, it's honest of you. And so, under the rules, those 2 points go to Prince Charles. 2 points. Two points to Prince Charles, right. Katie, why do we prefer a funny Valentine?
A study has been done which shows that women prefer funny men or find funny men attractive. Mm-hmm. And that was the headline, which doesn't particularly strike me as news. I feel like I've been told that my whole life. Maybe that's just because I work in comedy, though. So I meet comedians quite often. But what is actually, I think, more interesting about this study, which hasn't been very reported, is that they also found the reverse was true, that men found funny women attractive.
Oh.
Which is usually something that is disputed. Or there's this definition that when men say a woman's got a great sense of humour, what they mean is that she laughs at all their jokes. That used to be the cliché. But actually, this study seems to have found that men actually do find funny women attractive as well, except that on both counts, neither seems to see a funny person as a good long-term relationship option.
I misread this completely. I thought it said that women were attracted to furry men. And... Well, that explains that legendary love god, Andy Hamilton.
Apparently, it's only for short-term relationships.
Yeah.
Women find men, but they don't want to keep funny men.
No.
I was trying to think what I look for in a man, and the answer's nothing.
If you believe TV panel shows, what's attractive in a woman is sitting just laughing at all the men and not speaking at all.
Yeah, on TV panel shows, the best thing about a woman is if she's an ex-pop star.
Yeah, and
she can sit and enjoy the male comedians.
You guys are all so funny.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know anything. The rage.
Hubba, hubba.
Wardrobe, damp sponge for Humphrey, please.
A new study from the University of Stirling claims that funny men are more attractive to women than unfunny men, presumably. I can only presume that billionaire Bernie Eccleston must have a sparkling wit. Men who were funnier in their answers were judged to be more attractive, while men who repeatedly dodged the question were judged to be unfit to govern. 2 points to Katie. Humphrey, why are French railways holding a root and branch investigation?
This is the story about the new proposed Bordeaux to Bilbao line, which was they had an original planning sort of application put in.
Application.
And it went through some charming little village somewhere called Charming Village.
Village.
Le plus beau.
Yeah.
Nigel Farage is listening to this thinking, I understand every word.
Yes. He's putting a bag of frozen English peas on his groin.
No, damn you, no! Not now!
Not the hour of my triumph! So, they planned out their route, they planned out their line, and all of a sudden, rather strangely, it was moved sort of 60 kilometres west or whatever it was, and the residents of the new route line were like, Keska la hell is going on? And sort of looked into it. It transpired that the mother of some rather important French minister called François Gilles Egratier, his mother had, you know, evidently had a quiet word with him, and he'd had a quiet word with the people that were in charge of sorting out the route, and it had suddenly been rerouted. I slightly sympathise with him. I once kicked a football into my mother's greenhouse, and I still hear about it 19 years later. If I was to kick a high-speed rail link into her greenhouse, I dread to think what would happen. So it would appear, allegedly, he hasn't been officially done for it, but it seems like he may have used his influence in the corridors de power.
I love the idea that he's denying it in front of a map of the new route, which basically goes along and then just goes round the edge of his mum's garden in a book.
The judge did describe it as a filial love motivated him, which I thought was the title of the final Serge Gainsbourg album.
The high-speed rail link that was once going to go from London to Glasgow is now stopping at Birmingham. So somebody in the cabinet's mum must own Birmingham to Glasgow.
He's not happy, is he? He's rich and he's not happy, Osborne. Did you see him speaking to Aldi workers? It was very funny. He was being some elderly worker. Oh, my God, poor people, they won't understand me. Osborne did this. It was great. He was like, all right, well, I tell you what, I'm going to charge you an exchequer. Yeah, yeah. It's all right, beloved, it is. I'll tell you what, we get some pea soupers up London, we do. Yeah, I tell you what, work hard, you'll do well, son. Keep your nose clean. That's what I say. It was extraordinary. It was like Stanley Holloway.
I believe the technical term for that is taxi voice. It's a terrible phrase, but it's like a lot of people, like, their voices change and they get into
or
taxis.
Or plumber voice, I always think of it.
As you can tell from my thick Bootle accent, I'm a big Liverpool fan. And I went to the European Cup final in 2005 and I took my little video camera with me and shot lots of video while I was there, blah, blah, blah. Came home, watched it, and then realised that I could never show it to anyone ever again because unbeknownst to myself, throughout most of the game, I had adopted this horrible, unknowing, quasi-Liverpudlian accent that is just the worst.
Let's hear it.
The key moment is when Xabi, as we all remember, the narrative of the game, Liverpool 3-0 down at half-time, scored three goals in the second half, came back, won on penalties.
And, cut to the accent!
So when Xabi Alonso went up to take his penalty, this is one of the only bits that is indelibly printed on my mind. Someone behind me goes, who's taken it? Because the penalty was down the far end. Who's taken the penalty? Who's taken the penalty? And then just hear this awful, like, clammy voice go, it's Xabi, lad. A low ebb.
If anybody doesn't know, the TGV, that's the train in France, it can travel at speeds of up to 600 kilometres per hour. Very like our own high-speed railway, except, you know, high speed. François-Gilles Egretier, a former advisor to Christine Lagarde when she was French finance minister, is being investigated for allegedly changing the route of a new TGV train line to prevent it going through his mother's garden. Authorities are also investigating why the River Seine has been rerouted to her fish pond and why the Arc de Triomphe now forms part of her rockery. If found guilty, Monsieur Egretier could face a fine of up to 75,000 euros or 8 pence. 2 points to Humphrey. Fred, who's waiting for the sun before they put their hat on?
Pretty much all of us. We buy a lot of summer clothing in this country, and we don't wear it all. Collectively, it's about £500 million worth, sits in a drawer or a cupboard and it never gets put on. Individually, about 140 quid each, which is just what I spent last week on my summer merino wool duffel coat and long john set.
I was actually in Newcastle last weekend, and on Look North, or whatever the news programme was, the guy was like, look, you know, watch out, everybody. We've got a kind of a wind's blowing right in out of the arch. You've got to be really, really careful tonight. It's going to be icy. Went out, and people were dressed in handkerchiefs, basically. Nothing else. God bless you, Newcastle.
It gets really cold after Christmas, but all the shops, stupidly, get rid of all the winter clothes and put hot pants and Bermuda shorts and flip-flops in. Because you've got all your jumpers that you need to change, because people say, oh, I didn't know what size you were, so I thought I'd get something that was never going to fit you in a million years. And so you've got all these horrible jumpers and shirts that you don't want, and you just have to change it for a mankini, because that's all they've got in there.
This weird sort of season, don't they, that most people don't really relate to, called cruise wear, because there's just endless fuchsia palm printed caftans and
what's
things
wrong
like
with those?
No.
Yeah, but a cruise isn't a holiday though, is it? It's just a prison ship with karaoke, it's all it is.
A shopping website survey found that we waste £600 million a year on summer clothes we never wear because of bad weather. The survey found that the average British summer wardrobe consisted of 27 items, one pair of shorts, two T-shirts and 24 umbrellas. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr Hardy.
Sandy, this was sent in by Martin Barton, and it's a press cutting about the Worcester City football ground. For someone who spent a lifetime watching Worcester City through thick and thin, Ken Freeman is in remarkably fine fettle. But it hasn't always been like that. He said, I used to get really upset if they lost. It proper spoilt my weekend. It was a go home and kick the cat sort of thing. But I'm more relaxed about it now, and we haven't got a cat anyway.
Ms Brand.
This was sent in by Tom Inglis from the Lennox Herald. A Dumbarton man has been faced with the choice of eating or seeing his son following benefits cuts that came into effect recently.
Tricky choice. Mr Carr.
Well, this is taken from the North Devon Journal and has been sent in by Owen Jones. It's a report about the Parkham Women's Institute meeting. The speaker at the April meeting was Captain Colin Darch, who talked about piracy. Embarrassingly, the WI all dressed as pirates for the evening, not realising that Captain Darch was going to be talking about his experience of being held hostage by Somalia.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Katie have got 10 points, but this week's runaway winners are Humphrey and Fred with 14. Oh. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from Parenthood magazine sent in by Sue Roberts.
I get a great deal of satisfaction from changing dirty nappies, then dropping them off at school gates.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz with Jeremy Hardy, Katie Brand, Humphrey Carr and Fred McCauley. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair script was written by Roderick Crooks, Simon Littlefield and Lucy Clark, with additional material by Mandy Baker, James Bugg and Gronya Maguire. The producer was Sam Bryant.